You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason. Do you realise that you've been listening to this rubbish for 200 episodes now? Imagine all of the things you could have accomplished in that time. I mean, I'm paid to be here. What's your excuse?
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, It's March 28th, 2016. You're listening to episode 200 episodes. My name's Rob, that's Jason.
Hey.
200 episodes. Holy cow.
Yeah, I would not have predicted this 200 episodes ago.
No, absolutely not.
I may not have even predicted this 150 episodes ago.
Yeah. Holy cow, 200 episodes. Wow. I want to say 200 hours of content, but probably average more like about 45 to 50 minutes
but
each time. Still,
50 bonus episodes out there.
That's true. So. 52, I think, actually.
52. Thanks to Saloon Tycoon, we have several more lately. So
yeah. I feel like we should be drinking. I brought you a beer.
You did? Why? I just noticed you didn't bring one for yourself.
No, it was the last one I had in the fridge, and I wanted you to have it.
Oh, well, that's so nice. Do you want a beer? I can get you a beer.
No, that's all right. We already started. It's too late now.
I didn't realize until now that there was only one.
There's only one beer.
Oh, and it's this vanilla porter from Big Dog, Gonzo's.
Gonzo's.
Oh my gosh, this is
super good.
I think this is my favorite Kalamazoo beer.
Well, so. You still haven't had Tibbs, but...
Right.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, it's hard to beat vanilla porter.
Actually, you probably would still like this better. This is your style of beer. This is your kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, I was excited last night. We were at the work party. They had Alaskan Amber.
Yeah, I saw
so
that.
So I was pretty geeked about that.
Yeah, I had the cheap date, the Arcadia cheap date.
How was it?
It's pretty good.
What is it?
I guess it's an American ale.
Okay.
It's kind of hoppy.
Cheap date, that's funny. Yeah.
It's fairly hoppy. It was good, though. It was good. I've never been a huge fan of Arcadia. I think there's a lot of other beer in Michigan that's better, but it's good.
Yeah. I mean, I've never sought it out, but I don't think it's bad, but yeah. So, all right. Yeah.
Episode 200. We made it.
200.
We made it.
We're just going to, for the next hour, we'll just be repeating. Oh, whoa. 200.
200, man. Wow. 200. Who thought 200?
Yeah. So, hey, anyways, we do have a fun thing we're going to do tonight. We're not going to pitch a game. Well, we're not going to do the normal show tonight. Instead, which you probably expected because it's episode 200, do something a little bit different.
Yeah.
We thought and thought and thought and came up with a ton of ideas that we didn't like and then ideas that we did like but weren't feasible. And then it came down to finding something that just was us and very much fit how we are and who we are and what the show is. And one of our favorite things to do is lightning round pitch challenge. And generally the way that's done is we have multiple guests on the show or sometimes just one and they don't have a game to pitch. Mm-hmm. And then we will do a lightning round. But it's always most fun when there's a lot of people. But tonight it's just Rob and I. So what we're going to do is we each have some slips of paper in my mine in cups. You have yours in little bags.
Yep.
One of which is a plug. It's the Unpub bag from last year. It's a very fancy bag.
It's a nice bag. Little bag, yeah.
And so one bag and one cup for me has the name of a game, which is a fake game, obviously. Uh-huh. And then the other one has mechanics or components, correct?
Correct, yeah.
I did both, so hopefully you did too.
Yep, yep.
We agreed to try to mostly be nice this time around.
Mm-hmm. Not be too nasty with the options.
But we're gonna each pitch 10 games this way.
Right.
So to make this show not be 6 hours long, it's gonna be a 2-minute timer on us.
Right.
So it's literally gonna be lightning round. Like you do not have time to think, you just have to go.
Yeah.
So these games are gonna be bad, but I bet some of them will be funny.
That's the goal here.
Pretty much guaranteed.
Just
so,
to really, really stress out our kind of creative brainstormy stuff.
And then, so...
You've got a timer?
I'm going to pull up my timer on my phone, just my stopwatch here.
Sure, okay.
That way we can both see it.
We need to make sure there's a good alarm, a good loud beep, though, that comes at the end.
There's not.
Well, let me see. Do I have one? Let me check mine.
You could just use your sound effects to make a beep at the end.
Yeah, but that's more work.
No, I mean, like, the sound effects on your phone. Not, like, in post. Like, you could just do the sound effects on your phone.
Let's see.
The only thing I could do is set an alarm, but I have to set an alarm. I can't, like, for, like, 2 minutes out, and that's going to take forever.
Wait, I got a
timer.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just use the timer app.
Yeah. When timer ends. Oh, guys, let's see. What sounds good?
Can we just pick?
That is terrible.
This is good. This is good podcasting.
Oh, wait, classic. Okay, here it is.
There it is.
That it is. Yeah.
That's it. All
That's
right.
the what we're going to use. Okay.
Okay.
Cool. All right. So, set and set it for 2 minutes. Awesome.
Okay.
This is
so
great.
I ended up doing 20 of each.
Right, because I gave you bad information.
Yeah,
so
you're gonna only use half of mine.
Yeah,
so.
And I have 10 of each, so you're just going to draw one of each, so you don't know what they'll be.
Right.
So who wants to go first?
I don't care, man. Whatever.
Let's roll for it.
Let's roll for it? That sounds like a gamer thing to do. That sounds like the kind of thing that two gamers might do with dice. You know, it occurred to me also that we could just, like, roll a d20 to pick from a list of mine, but that's no fun. It's more fun to draw slips of paper out of a thing.
I had the same thought. Okay, so instead of rolling to see who gets higher, we're going to roll for first. This is a BTG die. We're going to roll for first BTG goes first.
Oh, okay, for BTG face?
Yeah,
right, I'll start.
First BTG face goes first. Oh, I thought
Fail.
You actually had it that time. We could be rolling for a while here. Oh,
got
Rob
it.
Got it.
I go first.
So Rob goes first. So the red clip is names,
okay.
And the silver clip is mechanics or components. So I'm going to let you take them out and read them.
Okay.
And after you've read them clearly to the audience and answered any questions you might have, if that's the case, then I'll hit the timer.
Okay, red is name and silver is mechanic.
Yes, or okay. component.
Or component, okay. Okay, so the name is My Autobiography, a Solo Game. That's pretty good.
Thank you. I felt good about that.
All right. Okay. Mechanic, component, clever. 20-sided die, 0 through 19, like they all are.
That's hilarious that was...
Right, the first one that I got.
So, all right.
I forgot to look for that die, dig it out of my dice jar.
Because no one believes it exists.
No one believes
Except
me.
For Len. Len has your back.
Right, okay.
So, all right, here we go.
So, My Autobiography, a Solo Game...
And start.
Okay, so this is a game. My life has been filled with moving, so it's a lot. I've moved around. I've been a bit of a gypsy in my whole life. So this is a solo game. It's about moving. My parents were big on the sentiment of grow wherever you are planted kind of idea. You know, so there is basically there's a rule book. Okay. There's a rule book. It's not even. The rules are in there, but you mainly use it as a way. It's kind of a choose your own adventure thing. Okay.
Okay.
And so there are 8 phases in my life. I'm just going to pick 8. And at the start of each phase, you roll that die, and that tells you what entry to go on for the next phase of your life. Like what step, you know, what the next step of your life is going to entail. And then when you get into that, so you pick that from the list, and that might be, move to California. It might be getting married. Hopefully that's not the first thing you do in your life when you're just born. Cause that would be kind of freaky.
Probably arranged.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And then from there, you have to then, out of that book, that reference book, there are a list of challenges you have to complete. Okay. And then what you do is you have to, you have this deck of cards, and the deck of cards has strengths and weaknesses in it. Okay. And every time you play a strength, you have to play a weakness along with it. They're coded together with icons.
Okay.
All right. And you have to play a certain number of each icon, for each phase of your life. And you have to play a strength to overcome those obstacles in your life, because they represent obstacles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But each time you do that, it reveals a new weakness within yourself. Those weaknesses then carry over into the next phase of your life. And then the next phase, you have to play more strength cards that could potentially to overcome those weaknesses, plus what's added to the other thing. Okay.
All right.
I think you can see where I was going with that.
Yeah, no, that was impressive. Okay. Yeah, I was really proud of that one. My autobiography.
That's good.
A solo game. Because I was like, I need to give you some direction with
right.
that.
So right. We might as so we'll just keep these on yours on my side and
yeah,
mine.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
the blue unpub bag is names
okay.
and the black bag here is mechanics and components.
Okay.
Okay. And I'll get the timer started.
Sure. So you just have to hit start when it's time. All right. So the name of this game is Microdome. And the component is a bingo cage.
You know what a bingo cage is?
That's the tumbler thing
right,
where you pull balls out.
Right. Yeah.
You're the worst. All right.
Okay. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Go.
Okay, so obviously the bingo cage is actually the microdome, right? Because, I mean, why would it not be, right? So that is the microdome, and it's kind of like the Thunderdome, you know? So inside, there are all these balls, but they don't have numbers on them, because I don't think they have to have numbers. It just has to be the ball, right? The thing, right? So inside are sweet character art on balls, right? And and you have characters and no, everybody's got so this is like a Thunderdome where they've locked all of these interesting and bad people, and you are trying to draft people out of this. Of course, it's totally random because it's a friggin' bingo cage. You're gonna draft people out of this. You spin the thing. I know it doesn't make sound like a Jack in the Box, but in my head it does. And then it falls out, and then you pull it out, right? And so you would think that it's like you're trying to fight, but what happens is actually each person has a name, right? Like Butch Indigo, right? And what you're trying to do is to have you the first name or the last name start with one of the letters in bingo until you can actually spell the word bingo. And then I guess when you spell the word bingo, you win, and you have no control over this game at all. So let's try and work that in. Okay, so some of the things that come out, if they have names that are not part of the bingo word, then you could you can spell other words with them. So there's a chart; it's got other words on it, like kill or blow up or something. I don't know. Like, and so if I can spell those words, then I eliminate those guys, but then the thing I want to happen happens. And I'm almost out of time. I don't think I can get any farther with that, but yeah. So all right, I'll take that.
All right, so should we, like, I was not responding to you in that. Would you have preferred that I had acknowledged anything?
I don't think that's bad if you're like, I like
okay.
that. Because,
okay.
I mean,
right.
I can't help but do that because I'm used to doing that when you're pitching
real
game. So.
Like I'm just doing right now.
Right.
Like, kind of reflexively.
Right.
It's difficult for me to not do that.
No, by all means. I mean, we don't want to take up the person's time, so we're not like we're going to respond to the comment, but you're more than welcome to say stuff.
Okay.
So that was funny to me that Microdome showed up with that.
Yeah, that was an odd coincidence. Odd coincidence. Okay, my next one here. Ooh, okay. This game name is Pluto Base / Cataclysm. So Pluto Base, as in the dwarf planet Pluto, and
correct.
A base on Pluto, / Cataclysm.
Cataclysm.
The mechanic is social bargaining. Social bargaining.
Does that need clarification?
A little bit.
So I think of it as a social mechanic to where you have to talk and you're bargaining with someone, right? Like
okay.
trying to bargain with them for something. But yeah, you're bargaining socially.
Okay.
So,
all right. So go ahead.
All right. Start.
This is one of those games that's going to go back to one of my favorite concepts that I never really figured out, which is the idea of the changeover moment, you know? So the game starts, the players are it starts out as a co-op game where the players are trying to build a settlement on the planet Pluto. This is in the 200 years in the future sort of medium distance futuristic situation. And they're working together to build this base, and they are helping each other grow crops and earn resources and there's some off-world trading, buying and selling of resources, but at some point in the game the cataclysm is going to hit, okay? Mm-hmm. And it will fracture the society. Okay. Uh-oh. And each person will control a quadrant of the settlement that is good at producing one specific resource but bad at other ones.
Okay.
And so then what you have to do is you want your section of the settlement to be the one that survives over the long term. And the social bargaining comes in where you have to negotiate with other players to get resources that you want in exchange for stuff that you have in surplus. Now, how do you do that? So the first part is basically you're going around and you're working together. There are goal cards you have to set up, and you are trying to grow resources. There's some die rolling in that. There is some card drafting in that to get resources up, and then to complete these goal cards. And these goal cards count towards points for everybody. But then when the cataclysm hits, and I think it's a meteor strike, actually, first thing that happens with the cataclysm is that at random, some quadrants or some tiles that represent your base get destroyed, and the resources that are generated by those tiles get destroyed, and you cannot produce those anymore.
I just want to say that I have like this terrible reflex every time I hear that, because that's the alarm that I use when I need to wake up in the morning. So I'm like, I get that little like tick. So
yeah,
I liked where that was going. That wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad. It was okay. Yeah, it was the beginning of something.
So
okay.
So
all right, I feel like I'm getting warmed up.
Yeah.
Okay, this is fun.
This is super fun. That's why we're doing it.
Yeah,
because we like to have fun. All right. The name of this game is Walnut Party, and the mechanic is Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Walnut Party. Any questions on that stuff?
I wish I could so I could stall, but no.
Okay,
for it.
Go.
All right, so Walnut Party. This is a game about anthropomorphic walnuts, and they're trying to just have a party, right? But the problem is they can never make decisions on things because I don't know if you know this, but walnuts are very fickle about their parties, right? You know, what time will we have tea? Who's going to bring the snacks and all that jazz? So they're living in this in a big hollowed out tree, as walnuts do, and they are having this. They're trying to have this party. So in the game, you are trying to bring the best stuff to the party, maybe? I don't know. You're trying to bring the best stuff to the party, but it's really about having a good time, too. So the idea is that, oh, yeah, this is what it is. You want to bring the best stuff to the party so that other people have a good time, and that's how you score points, because walnuts also very much like to make others happy. So that's what's going to happen, is that you are going to try and bring stuff to the party and make them happy. So how does that work? Well, each round... each round, one player of the group will play the storekeeper, and that guy is like the party store guy, and you go to him to get all your party supplies. And the way you decide to pay for stuff is by rock, paper, scissors. So like you also have some money, but like to get deals, you have to play rock, paper, scissors. And if you win, you get a deal, but if you lose, you get screwed. And if you tie, then... If you tie too many times on that turn, the shopkeeper just gets upset and doesn't want you to sell you anything. So then you're hosed and you can't bring anything to the party. But each round, you stock up things to bring to the party, and then you keep those things in secret. And at the end of the game, the player who has the best stuff at the walnut party, and all the players have things that they like, right? And you want to try and match to what those players like. All right. I guess close enough to done. I feel
like that's not bad.
So, yeah.
I should just use my own timer on my own phone, too, just so I don't have to keep sliding yours back and forth, right? Okay. Let's just get this set up here. Okay.
What is your sound set to, though?
Let's see. What do I have
You go
here?
To that, you go to classic, and then if you go to alarms... Oh, it's already set to that, yeah. Okay. All right, cool. Okay,
so I'm up next here.
Yes.
Okay. And we're just keeping track of them over here, so we don't go over or too few. All right. I kind of like that title. So the title I have here is To the Depths.
Okay.
To the Depths. And the mechanic is dice only. Oh, dice only. Dice only. To the Depths. Dice only.
And any questions?
Yeah, go. Three tries.
Sorry.
So To the Depths, it's a dice game, duh, right? So To the Depths, this is about an undersea exploration, okay? And it would have to be, right?
That's what I wanted it to be about.
Yeah, that's the obvious answer. I could try and be clever with it, but I mean, let's just get to it. And you see, I'm stalling here. To the Depths. It's a dice game. You say dice only, so I'm not even allowed cards. Wow. Okay. So the dice are, there are two different kinds of dice. There's traditional D6s in there, but there are also, well, so they're all six-sided dice, but there are traditional D6s that are number 1 through 4 or 1 through 6. That's tough.
0 through 5, maybe.
There are other dice that are, they're custom die faces. Okay. I gotta have like a board though to place things on. Okay. All right. I gotta have something to put dice on. So the first thing you do is that you roll the face dice. Okay. And they get assigned to slots on this display that correspond with a number. Okay. And then on your turn, and these represent the artifacts that you're trying, that you're searching for in this sunken lost city under the ocean. And then on your turn, you take up the dice way, and everybody has a dice pool. Okay. And at the start of every day, so they start the game with six D6s, and on every turn, you can add two dice to your pool. Okay. You have to roll at least two at every time, but you can roll more than that if you want to. Okay. So on your turn, you roll as many dice as you want, minimum of two, could roll all six. And then you, whatever the results are, you can choose to assign those dice to certain slots to pick up that specific item, or you can save those dice. If you don't want to assign it to a slot, you can save those dice till the next round and re-roll them or reuse the number. Let's see. Okay.
Not as thorough on that one.
No, that was a little tougher.
I thought dice only might be a little challenging. I was going to say like dice, but I was like, let's make it dice only.
Yeah, that's tough.
Right.
Okay. What do we got?
The name of the game is Wrap It Up. And the mechanic is a mousetrap-like plastic assembly.
Okay.
I'm going to be nice with this stuff. I'm not going to do anything mean.
You good with that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this is a game about trying to wrap packages, right? You work for a shipping place, and you're trying to map packages, and you've got this crazy conveyor belt that things have to go through, and like... The owner is a very big Rube Goldberg fan, right? So it's this crazy thing, and it's electronic, obviously. So what you're going to do is you're going to put a package at the beginning, right? And it's just a cube, but it's like a big cube, right? And there are different sizes and different shapes, and you put it on the conveyor belt, and then you're going to move it throughout the game, and the goal is to get it to one of the spots where it would drop off to the right size. And then it would get wrapped, and it doesn't actually get wrapped. That'd be sweet if it did, but it doesn't because that's hard. So, but the goal is to wrap as many packages as you can in the game, right? I feel like maybe this game, yeah, I think so. I think it's electronic, so I think that the thing is always moving, and whenever a package goes off the end, you have to pick it back up and put it back in your pool. You have a pool of packages, like mine are all green, yours are all blue. We all have all the same shapes, right? But the goal is to get the things to the right place. So what could stop that? Well, on that conveyor belt, there are going to be like levers and stuff that are pointing things in different directions. And so there's different spots where you want the packages to drop off based on the shape. And so to do that, you have to play cards to move the levers in different directions. In fact, maybe even roll dice. Kind of like the idea of dice. You roll dice and then... based on what you get, the values you get, the actions you get, you can switch around the levers to try and make it so that your packages fall in the right spot. And if they land in the right spot, they're automatically wrapped and shipped out, and you score points for that. You jot down your points. At the end of X number of rounds, the game ends, and that's what I have. That is a full pitch. I feel okay about that. All right. So what we're doing here, by the way, is when it gets down to about 10 to 15 seconds, we pick it up and then the other person can't see it anymore.
Right.
So, but I actually feel okay about that. That actually sounds interesting to me. Not an actual electronic game, but to have like a board that's a conveyor belt.
Sure.
With switches on it that you could move things to maybe even have cards that overlay it to kind of like change the chutes different directions.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Anyways, I feel okay about that.
Not bad. Not bad.
My favorite one that I've done so far.
Okay. Good. I was, when I wrote that wrap it up, I was thinking, oh yeah, that could be like wrapping up a mummy. That'd be cool.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's good. Yeah. So
okay. We've got here okay, this name is Sriracha Surprise.
Yes.
And the mechanic is blindfolds.
I promise that is the worst mechanic in there.
That is pretty bad. Some of mine are worse though, so we'll see what you pull out of there.
Oh, great.
Sriracha Surprise. So that goes very well. Okay, good. You got it?
Yep.
Okay. That goes, Sriracha Surprise, blindfolds, right? So the game, this is a game where you, it's a deduction game, okay? And the problem with it is you don't know, you can't see the color of the pieces, okay? So there are a bunch of, thematically speaking, you are a guy who, you're a blind man who, no, you're working in the hot sauce factory and you've been blinded by hot sauce. You got hot sauce in your eye and so you're blind, but you still have to work on the line and you have to sort the different hot sauces as they come down the line. And so what you have to do is you have to ask questions of the other players about what kind of, it's just a card in your hand, right? But as cards are presented to you, you have to ask questions about of your fellow players about what kind of hot sauce that is in your hand, and then you have to sort those into piles, okay? And so the thing is, you can't say what kind of hot sauce is this. All you can only ask yes or no questions. Okay, you can say that's all you're allowed to use. You can ask them yes or no questions and say, is this a green hot sauce? Is this a blue hot sauce? Is this a red hot sauce?
But you can't say, is this a specific hot sauce?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. And they are either going to say yes or no. Okay. And if they say yes, you're like, haha, I know what that one is. And then you can't see, you're blindfolded. So you have the table in front of you and you can't see where you're putting these. You have to just kind of do it by feel. And then if you get a yes, then you know exactly what it is and where it goes. But if it's a no, you have to put it into some kind of another pile. Okay. And you only get one question per card. All right. And so the goal is after the deck is run through, then, you have to pick up that stuff that you weren't sure what the right answer was. And you then have to, yeah. Let's just get into the meat of that, man. Just about to get good, and I got cut off.
Oh, see, I felt like I understood what was happening in the game. it's like Hanabi, but you can't cheat.
Because you're blindfolded.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I just saw the name of this game.
All right. Okay.
Okay, so the name of this game is Hella Umbrella, which, to be fair, sounds like a title I would come up with. So
it does, right?
That's fair.
I thought it was good for you.
And the mechanic is deck building, which is surprisingly not terrible. So let's go.
Okay.
So everybody knows that Hella Umbrella is a big supervillain. And the big supervillain, Hella Umbrella, he has, like, he is unstoppable. He has all these resources in his hands. And all the good superheroes have been just slaughtered, right? So now, a group of people have come together to try to steal enough resources from Hella Umbrella to make themselves powerful enough to take Hella Umbrella down. So this is a unique deck-building game in the fact that, first of all, it's co-op. And second of all, you're taking from a common pool that is both the bad guy and you. So what that means is the cards are going to be double-sided. The one side is going to be what you want. The other side is going to be what Hella Umbrella wants. So what's going to happen is there's the main deck, right? And you are it's bad guy side up, right? It's good guy side up. So you always know what's available to you. So what'll happen is you'll be dealt cards off the top of the deck on your turn. those will go into your hand, and you'll be able to play those out, right? So there's going to be like a main deck that everybody's sharing. In there'll be exactly enough cards for everybody to draw five cards, right? So there'll be 20 cards in a four-player game. No, sorry, there'll be 25 because everyone will draw four, and then whatever five cards are left, that's what Hella Umbrella does on that on his turn, right?
Yeah,
or her turn. I feel like Hella Umbrella could be a girl supervillain.
Sure.
So yeah,
sure.
So those five cards come out. Oh, now we have to react to it with the cards we have in our hand. But any cards we don't spend, we get to keep. Mm. And we get to take those and put them into our personal deck, right?
Okay.
So how does a personal deck work? Wow, that is a great question. Oh my gosh, I'm almost out of time. So the personal deck, the way that's going to work is you're going to use that somehow and do something to fight Hella Umbrella. After so many turns, you're going to be able to take your personal deck and then use it to... I really like that idea.
Actually, I like that too. You just put out 25 cards every time, and then you get to sort through them. You think? And
I think that you just get what you get, right?
Like yeah.
Everybody's dealt five cards, and then actually, what you could change it to is everybody's dealt five cards, and but they draft. Only get to keep four.
Yeah,
so they have to pitch one. And so you're pitching something, and I think that you have to look at the cards in front.
Well,
of
anyway,
you.
That's yeah. enough. We got to stop. Yeah,
I'm going to talk about that some other time.
It's not a bad,
that's fun.
That's, yeah, that's not a. Yeah,
I like that one.
It's an interesting so, approach.
All right.
All right, my turn again here. So we've each done four so far.
Yes.
Yes.
Now you're about to do the fifth one.
Yeah. Okay, so we're halfway through this adventure here.
Yes.
Okay. Man, you've been super nice about these game titles for the most part. I mean, you really have.
I tried to be yeah. nicer.
Wow, you're nicer than me.
You told me to be nice.
I know. Well, I thought you're normally so awful.
I know.
Okay, so the name here is Clockwork, and the mechanic is drafting round tiles.
Yes.
So just like Carcassonne tiles, but they're round, and you're drafting them.
Yes.
Clockwork. This, naturally, what you're drafting is clock faces.
You're so freaking lucky.
Yeah, I'm super lucky. Clock faces, and every clock face has certain statistics on it. So, so what kinds of stuff could be determined by clock faces? So there are different ways of measuring passage of time. So some might be just a straight up, you know, 12-hour clock face. There might be one that actually ends up being a digital readout as a military time. There could be one that marks the seasons, one that marks day or night, one that might marks passage of time on a galactic scale, you know, revolutions of the galaxy. So your goal is to get a complete set of each, okay, one of each type. So the way you do that is you have these tiles, and you also have a layout, a board in front of you. Each player has their own custom board that has, and I'm going to say there are seven different faces of these clocks. When you can take these tiles, when you want to reserve a tile for sure, like I'm going to save this one for points, you have to lock it into your tableau or your board in front of you. As you're drafting, trying to get things, in addition to these filling slots, these individual clock faces also have unique powers, unique abilities. Like for example, the one that has Galactic Revolution means that it just everything on the intergalactic scale, universal scale is minuscule. So if you do that, you basically you can change things on the big picture. So everyone then has to pass their point display to the left, okay? But on the hourly one, the hourly clock, you're going to pass one tile to the guy on your right.
You got lucky, man.
Yeah.
Clockwork, yeah. And it came with the round tiles.
Yeah, that's been. Yeah, you're a little upset with me on that one, aren't you?
I'm just a little annoyed about how easy that was.
Okay, sir. Let's see what you get here.
Deep down in here, this mechanic bag. All right. So the name of this game is The Lost Lands.
The Lost Lands.
Yes, and the mechanic is. Bluffing.
Okay. You ready?
Yep. All right, so in this game, you play a salesman for a company that sells trips to fake places that are mythological, but you tell people that they're real. So, like, I'm selling a cruise that goes to the center of the Earth, and that's my shtick. And maybe you're selling something to some to the Lost World where there's dinosaurs, right? So that's our job. Is each of us is a pitch man for one of these places. And obviously bluffing is the thing, right? So what we have to do is we have cards that tell us things that are real and things that are fake. And we, on these trips, we need to be able to provide you with enough real that you feel like you're getting a decent deal. And that way you don't like riot and the people don't get really mad and like, burn your place down. So that's the goal, is don't burn my place down. And the person who, the person who has the happiest customers at the end wins. But of course, you're lying to the customers. So you're going to be to represent the customers, you have your other players, right? So you're going to be trying to bluff to them about the things that are actually happening. You'll do that with cards. You'll have cards that will have information on them about different places that you can go on your trip and things you might see. And some of these things will be things that are actually plausible to see, and others aren't. Now, obviously, if it was just information, you could memorize them, and that sucks. So what's going to happen is, on any given turn, there's going to be a card that's going to be face down, and it's going to say player 1A, player 2C, player 3D, and that will be the things that are going to be true on your card. And you're going to... Somehow you have to be able to see that ahead of time. I don't know. But the idea is you want to bluff to the other people about getting them to believe that that's going to be real. And if they vote that it's real, then you score points and your people are happy. And if they vote that it's not real, then you don't score points. You lose points and their happiness rating goes down. If it gets low enough, people abandon you. That was harder. I feel like I nailed the theme really quick, but after that, mechanics were difficult.
Yeah, a little rough. That's okay. That's all right. That's all right. Most of these are going to be garbage. So that's part of the fun.
I'll take it.
But I feel like this is going really quickly.
It's not, though, because we've been recording for a while. So.
I know. It's crazy. It feels like it's going so fast. Okay. So I've got here, the game's called Parking Valet.
Yes.
And the mechanic is triangular player boards. Ooh.
Go.
Okay. So triangular player boards. Jeez. So it's a game about parking cars. I guess I have to.
Triangular cars?
No, that would be ridiculous. What you're doing is, you know what? Oh, man. Triangular player boards. So I think you have to assemble these player boards into some kind of map. Oh, geez. That is hard. Oh, boy. Triangular player boards. Dude, I think... Oh, okay. All right. I don't even know. I've got nothing for this.
I didn't even think that was that bad.
I'm thinking about them as representing a parking lot, and you're kind of trying to organize them as, you know, parking spaces, but to try and make poor parking spaces for the vehicles. But I don't... The lines and the angles are not good. So maybe the hardest part of being a valet is not banging up the cars. That's it. Okay, so the hard thing about being a valet is not putting dents in other people's cars. And the thing about the place where you work is that their parking lot just blows. It's the worst parking lot ever. In fact, it's just a big tangled mess. And so what you have to do is every player actually has six of these triangular boards, and you have to, as you play the game, rearrange them and how they connect with each other to make the specific section of the parking lot that you're assigned to for these individual cars. Now you've also got cubes that the cubes represent the actual cars that you're trying to park. And there are rules about how you can That's hard, man.
I think I stumped you on that one.
I
didn't think it was that bad. Like, I was the only reason I even said triangular player boards because I wanted you to force you to. I knew that if I said that, you would be forced to justify why they were triangular or to use them as triangular. In your case, you were trying to build a map, which made it very hard. I was just trying to force you have to justify why they were triangular, because I knew you wouldn't be just like, oh, they're triangular, whatever.
Because with that theme, that was tricksy.
Neither one of those were even that bad, but together they were not great.
Yeah.
All right, my turn again. Okay. Here we go.
Got something good, I hope.
The name of the game is Pincushion.
Pincushion.
And the mechanic is route building. I got this. This is going down.
Here we go.
All right, so you are these little tiny voodoo spirits, right? Ooh. And the pincushion is actually a voodoo doll, right? And the voodoo doll is sitting in a place, and you are trying to get to the top of the voodoo doll. It's that simple, right? And so what you're trying to do is stick the pins in certain spots so that it can make a path for you to get to the top. But of course, there's a complication, and that is that you're actually in like a backpack, right? So you've got this in a backpack, right? And the problem is that the person that is the voodoo doll is the person wearing the backpack. So when you stick a pin in to, because you're trying to climb to the head, right? That's because the first person gets ahead can control the voodoo doll and win because of voodoo. I don't know why about voodoo, but.
Sure.
So the idea being that when you, like, if you stick it in the knee or something, right, then you're going to make a die roll to see what the reaction of the person is, which is going to change the angle of the board. So there's actually a voodoo doll shaped board, right? It's determined at the beginning, you put a marker that means up and down at the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the different angles. So what'll happen during the game is that pincushion will keep turning, right? Because the person, every time they get stabbed, will be like, oh, you know, so that will determine the angle, which then determines how, if your path is actually going to work, because you might put a pin here so that you can climb up, but then that ends up being down because it has changed, right? And the goal is you have to have the head at the top when you win, because that's the goal. So, any other things? You can interact with other players by stabbing them with pins, maybe? I don't know. Do you stab each other with pins? You could. I guess you could. No rule against that. So, climbing. That's what I got. You know, I'm always reminded that theme is the easiest thing for me.
Yeah.
Because, like, I can usually be like, boom, theme. And then it's like, now I don't know where to go after that.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. Okay. All right. Here comes number seven. Round seven. Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
Okay, so the game is called Cartography Club. And you've got here no dice, no cards, no tiles.
I was super hoping that would happen on that game, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Because that should be difficult.
Cartography Club. Go. So what you do have are pawns, right? You have pawns, you have resource markers. So this is actually going to be a piece of cake, really. Cartography Club, is an exploration game. I've already got some exploration games and I'm pitching here tonight. So let's go a different
route.
That's
your new grid.
That's, we're going to go a different route. Cartography Club is, it's an area control game. Okay. Because you're laying claim to regions that have previously been uncharted. So I guess thematically it's exploration, but the way it actually plays is area control. And so you've got an army of cartographers.
An army of cartographers.
Right. Cartographic students. Of students, you're the professor, and you have started the cartography club at your college, and so the students are whom you're sending out to claim these territories for you. Now, you as the professor have a unique power that differs from the ability of the students. So students are basically powerful and can control areas in mass. But they move very slowly. Whereas a professor is very powerful on his own, and he moves very quickly. But students lose interest quickly. Also, that's the thing about students is that they get distracted easily. So the professor needs to be around the students to rally them together, to encourage them, to hold the territory. Because if he doesn't, they start to wander away. So basically what it is the professor can move quickly and he will always draw students toward him. But any time that he is away from students, they will tend to wander off and lose interest in whatever's going on. So your goal is to...
Failed. This is going to be a piece of cake.
I was getting there.
That's what you said. This is going to be a piece of cake.
I was getting to something though. Oh. 2 minutes. 2 minutes is tough.
2 minutes is tough. You originally thought we were going to do 1 minute.
I'm glad that I was wrong about that.
The name of this game is Phyllis Starts Her New Career. And that's a bad name. That's a bad title.
I'd love it.
And the mechanic is tile placement.
Tile placement. You ready?
I am ready.
Go.
All right, so you're placing tiles for Phyllis's career. Well, this is easy peasy. I'm going to make this one short and save some time in the end. So here's the idea. Phyllis is starting a new career, right? Duh, that's the name of the game. We already know that. But she's starting a new career. Let's say it one more time. She's starting a new career.
Okay.
The idea is there are different things she needs to do in that career to move up, right? And you're trying to get Phyllis to the top of this new career. And she's going to start at a low level, doing some menial entry-level job. But what she's going to do with these tiles are, the tiles, that's actually a board of advancement, right? And these tiles are all skills she's acquiring and or things she's accomplishing. And you can kind of use them commingled together. So if I put down a skill in a certain area, because this board kind of goes up as its salary raises and stuff. So like, I put this board together. When I put the tile down, if I put a skill down, that unlocks achievements that I can put in. So the achievements are also tiles. So I have to have an achievement that's correlated to a skill, right? And as soon as I get enough of those in a section, I get to get promoted to the next section, which gives me more money. I can spend money to do things like get more training so I could get more skills, right? Or I could spend money to get some favors from some people that I work with. And that would give me more achievements that I could put out there. In addition to that, I can pursue bad ways to do things by using insider information or working with people at other companies. And if I do that, I can also spend more money on that. Or I can just go out and have fun with my money, which increases my morale, which makes my skills more valuable when I choose to use them. And you're playing against other players. Everybody is playing someone named Phyllis, and you're trying to start their new career. And done. But you gotta let the timer go off.
I feel like you're not using up all the time, man.
Well, I feel like I don't always need to. Wow. That game designed itself. I'm gonna take it to Umpub.
Yeah, you should.
Phyllis starts her new career.
Definitely do that because I'm sure that's a winner.
I know someone named Phyllis though, and spelled with a Y, so it's really driving nuts that you spelled it with two I's.
I think it was originally Philip, and then I changed it to Phyllis because for some reason that sounded funny to me, funnier than Philip.
Because Phyllis is a different name.
I don't know why, but
Philip.
Something about Phyllis sounded funnier to me.
It does.
Okay. Here we go.
There's still a couple of good ones I'm waiting for you to get to.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
Oh.
That's what I like to hear. What do you got?
Okay. The game is called TV Travel Show The Game.
Yeah.
And the mechanic is throwing darts.
That was me being nice to you with the theme.
Uh-huh.
And go.
Well, so it's a darts game, and it plays on a standard dart board. Everyone knows that the best darts game is cricket, right?
Yes.
Cricket is by far the best game. It's also the only darts game that I know how to play. And I'm drawing a blank to actually how to play it right now. TV Travel Show The Game. So the idea is so when you buy the game, you get an overlay for a standard dartboard, whatever standard dartboard size is. It's an overlay for that, and you can just like stick it on there with push pins. You know, it's it would probably come with like 20 of it, and like on thin paper that it's reusable. You know, or you just rip it off and replace it with a new one every time. And on the dartboard there are photos or postcards of different locations that you want to go. On your turn, you draw at the start of the game, you draw from the deck, you draw six cards, okay? And these cards correspond with locations, with postcards that are printed on the dartboard display. And this is the season of the television show that you're going to try and make. What you're doing is then you also have a budget, okay? And the budget is equal to an amount of distance, error distance, okay? So what you're going to do is you're going to throw the dart at the dartboard, and if you hit one of your postcards, congratulations, you managed to visit that spot, okay? If you miss, what you can actually do is you can spend some money to correct. So you look at the placement of your dart, then you get, and it also comes with a little ruler, okay? And you spend money that offsets any mistake or any flexible space in there. So the goal is to end the TV season with the most unspent money possible. Okay.
That you did better with that than I thought.
I did too. Oh boy. Okay.
All right, so this is number 8 for me.
Mhm.
The name of the game is Fart Monkeys.
Yeah.
And the mechanic is 4 four-sided dice.
Yeah.
All right, start me up.
Go.
All right, so Fart Monkeys. So this is a kid's game, and because why not? And you've got these monkeys, right? And at the beginning of the game, you pump the monkeys up with air.
I like this.
And on your turn, you plug their bottoms with a 4-sided die, and there are 4 monkeys because it's a 4-player game. You set them on the 4-sided die, and then there's also like a there's another pump. So you pump the monkeys up to a certain point, right? Somehow you know what that is. Their hand goes up or something. I don't know. And then you stick the 4-sided die in their butt, I guess, for lack of a better term. Then you've got you've got to take some action. So you have a board that you're moving around. There's a big wheel hooked to it, and there's a board, right? So there's a board, and you're moving along the board somehow. Ah, shoot. This was going so well too. Because basically the goal of the game is to be the first person to squeeze the monkey enough to where he farts out the 4-sided die, and then you win. Because I think that's the best mechanic ever. So you roll dice. Why not? You've got dice. So you roll dice. And based on those dice results, that tells you where you get to squeeze the monkey. Yes! Where you get to squeeze the monkey. And so you add up points because it's teaching kids about math and farting. So you get enough points. And the more points you get, the more likely you can squeeze them towards the middle, which is more likely to help. But some of the times you like squeeze his arm, and it's hard to squeeze his arm and make it work. But you just have to squeeze him, so the first one that gets him to fart out the die wins. And that is a game that kids will not buy. Well, kids would buy, but their parents won't let them. So, yeah.
You know, I've actually played a game called Gassy Gus.
Oh, really?
It was great. It was fun. It was super fun. It was a kid's game, but it was great because there was basically just a plastic dude in an armchair in the middle of the board,
uh-huh.
And you would have to move around the board. It's been a long time. So I think you were moving around the board, I don't know why you're drawing more. And as you're playing, you would have to pump a little plunger, and that would pump air into Gus.
Oh.
And it would be a balloon, and it was a stomach.
Uh-huh.
And randomly, depending on how much air was in there, how hard you pumped or whatever, he would occasionally fart, and the balloon would stretch too much, and it would force the air out, and it would go... And then whenever he would fart, your turn would end or something.
That's hilarious.
But it was really cool. And you just used a regular old latex balloon. So you could, if the balloon that came with went bad, you could just throw another one in there. It was pretty
funny. That's funny. So, yeah. Well, that's the game I designed. So yeah. I had no idea that existed. All right, what do you got? Guess.
Okay.
Number nine. Okay. There's only one I can think of that you haven't opened yet. There's clearly two, but...
Okay. The game is War Dolphins.
That was the one I could think of.
And the mechanic is Pulling Chits. Pulling Chits.
And go.
War Dolphins. So, War Dolphins, this is a game about space whales and space porpoises. So, this takes place in a distant galaxy where the space between the planets is a setting for a great battle between the great porpoises of space, and the War Dolphins are waging war. It's a war of space porpoises versus space insects, honestly. So the porpoises are trying to kill the insects, right? So you are playing the game. So what you do is you put cardboard chits. You start the game by building your army. You spend points to buy a certain number of units, okay? And each player puts all those things into a bag and shakes it up. And then you also throw in a certain number of death tokens, okay? And then what you do, you take turns on your turn, is you pull a thing out of the bag. If you pull one of your own guys out of the bag, then you put it in front of you, and that's a warrior who's going to work for you. That's basically a victory. If you pull one of your opponents out of the bag, then that's a loss for you, okay? And if you pull a death token out of the bag, that's also a loss for you, okay? And so you do that for a round until the bag is empty, okay? And then however many of your guys that you have in front of you, then battle, okay? And based on the powers of the, you know, just whales, there's dolphins, there's manatees on the one side, there's spiders, there's crickets, so the different units had different powers, and then you roll dice based on what their powers are, and then they fight it out. And you do three rounds of battle, and then whoever wins the battle... becomes the victor in the War of the Porpoises.
But what is the porpoise of the war, Rob?
Well, that's the great question, Jason.
That's not bad.
The one that we all want to know.
Okay. So I literally did not know what the mechanic and what was the thing. But I'm pretty sure that this is the mechanic. I mean, this is the thing. Stones is the name of the game.
Yes, Stones is the name of the game. The name of the game is Stones.
And the mechanic is two spinners.
Two spinners.
Start me up.
Go.
All right, so this is a game about collecting minerals. They're not stones, Rob. They're minerals, and the idea is you want to you're trying to find the right kind of minerals. But sometimes minerals like geodes just look like stones on the outside.
It's true.
So yeah. So the idea, right, is that you've got these two spinners, and one spinner is one spinner is, my brain is starting to melt. So one spinner is a location that you're going to look. No, actually, you're going to spin both spinners, and those are going to be coordinates. And there's also a board, and that board has like a digging pit you would dig in to find these minerals.
Okay.
And so I'm like click, click, and then it gives me coordinates, and then those are the coordinates I have to dig in. Now, I could change those slightly if I wanted to. Through some mechanic like that I haven't invented yet.
Sure.
It's going to be awesome though. So once you have that location, then you can put a thing there and say, I'm digging here, or you can say, I'm not. And then if you don't say you're digging there, you can take a different action, right? So basically ignore that. If I get an area you're in, then I can't do anything with that. Unless you were willing to let me. I don't know why you would be. You're not stupid. So, not. Yeah. But anyways, so that boom, boom, then, this is part of the dig site. This is where I'm going, right? So I'm going to go try to that dig site. I can either dig there, like claim that area, which means that that I've claimed it, but I'm not cultivating anything out of it. I'm not looking for anything until a later round when I get a different area and choose to know I'm going to cultivate in this area. And certain areas are more likely to have sweet minerals than others. And, yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do. Spinners. Okay.
That was rough for you.
That was rough.
That was a hard one. This is the last round.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I've done 9, and so have you. So
this is the last round.
This is number 10 for you, last one. Yeah. I don't remember what they are, even though I only had 10. So.
I mean, you're going to have 10 more of each right. in there that you could keep going with.
I'm not going to, because yeah. My brain is already on fire.
Oh, this is an interesting concept here. So the game is called The Magician's MacGuffin.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pick up and deliver.
You know what a MacGuffin is, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Explain it, though, for the builders and kids.
So the MacGuffin is the thing that in a movie, right, that they're trying to get. It's the MacGuffin. It's the thing they got to get a hold of that drives the plot of the movie. So, yeah.
Right.
In layman's terms. All right. And all yours.
Okay, so the players are the magician's assistants, right? And he's got several assistants, equal to however many players there are. as it turns out, he's about to start the big show, and he forgot his MacGuffin. And what is his MacGuffin? I don't know. Is it the rabbit that he's going to pull out of the hat? Is it going to be the lady he's going to chop in half? Is it going to be the flowers that he's going to pull out of his sleeve? I don't know, but he needs something to be the MacGuffin, okay? So, and he's sending his assistants out across the city to find his MacGuffin, because he just needs one. He doesn't care what it is. He doesn't care what it is, okay? So, what they've got to do is they've got to go out to the four corners of the city and find a MacGuffin. But they can't just grab a MacGuffin, because you need something that's specifically trained for magic use. You know, you need the rabbit that is trained to just sit still and be a magic rabbit. You need a lady that knows how to be chopped in half. You can't just pick up any old lady off the street. Okay. So what you have to do is you have to, first of all, you have to go out to the four corners of the board, and that's where the advertising job boards are. Okay. And you have to go there, and it's a deck of cards at each corner, basically a series of orders. And what you have to do is you have to go see what the order is. And then, you have to go to, move to another spot in the city to pick up the thing that order is requesting. All right. When you do that, you earn a currency of some kind. And I'm not going to say it's money. I want to say it's goodwill. Because really, ultimately, what you're doing is you're trying to build up enough goodwill with the magic shop owner so that he will let you in so that you can get what you really need, which is the magician's MacGuffin. Okay. So I guess what you're doing is you're picking up orders from the magic shop, not from the job board. You're taking orders. Oh gosh, that was a bad one for me to end on.
That was a bad one for you to end on.
Whew,
not one of your best.
Don't feel good about that at all.
All right. All right, last one for me.
Last one for you.
I'm gonna mix it up real good and pull it out. Not that it matters. I'm gonna mix it up real good, pulling out. All right, this is the last one. We'll answer some questions, and it'll be awesome. All right.
Oh, I see that mechanic. I'm glad you got that one.
The name of this game is Diggory Ding. Okay, that sounds weird. And the mechanic is an RPG with multiple GMs, and I hate you.
Okay, Diggory Ding and an RPG with multiple GMs. You ready?
I'm ready. Diggory Ding is a character. He is this man that lives in this fantasy world that he's created. He calls it Dingville. And he has basically created this life for himself there. But the problem is the man has multiple personalities. So what's going to happen is he has several different goals he wants to achieve during this RPG. At the beginning of the game, he's given a goal based on... Well, actually, what happens is everybody rolls a different character, basically, with the same stats. But they decide, this is what my character is going to do this game, and has to meet some certain criteria to make sure it's tough enough. But what will happen throughout the game is... I think we'll just time it. At certain points in the game, it will switch perspectives, and one player will be the GM, while all the other players are fighting for control of the person, right? Of Diggory Ding, of course. So they're all each trying to control for their personality to take over. But when they're GM, they have a chance to push him towards certain things or stop him from doing other things. And the best is nobody knows what their one personality wants to do. So Yeah, so they're trying to all accomplish different goals, but those goals are secret, and it's done with the RPG's mechanics. You roll dice, you don't fight any monsters, I don't think, because in his fantasy world, he doesn't have monsters. It's a boring fantasy world. It's actually really weird and boring. It's a weird kind of boring. It's like Wizard of Oz, but on hallucinogens, but with nothing dangerous. So he's just, you know, he just wants to do his thing. So, yeah, so you go around trying to do stuff. Well, you take turns being GM and stopping you from doing stuff. And in the back of the book, there's a number to call if you are actually experiencing multiple personalities. Because you should get help for that.
All right. Not a strong ending for you either.
No, so you can feel better about that. All right. Well, this was super duper fun, though. I very much enjoyed this.
Yeah, me too.
It was silly and it was crazy, but it was fun. And yeah.
I want you to read through some of the stuff you didn't pull out of those bags.
Sure. Sure. I'd be happy to. So, all right. So for game names that I did not pull out.
Because you dodged some bullets there.
I bet I did. Infrazone. Mince and Quarter. Pop and Lock. Oh, I like that. Ice Rugby. Teeter Tactics. And Power Forge. Oh, there's even more. There's two more. There is Graveyard Scramble and Baby Bombers.
There was one more in there, right? Oh, there's two more in there.
Oh, what do you got?
Okay, we've got Hurricane Coast, which I think is pretty good.
That's good.
My favorite, and I'm sad you didn't pull this one out, though. Refrigerator Repair and Maintenance for Beginners.
Oh, that's a good one.
I know.
See, if I were you, I would have pulled out the ones that I didn't think were as nice. It was as good.
It's more fun to not know what's coming.
Oh, gosh. Minimum of 8 players. That is terrible. Drafting's not bad. Electronic Squawk Box Miniatures. I'd have been comfortable with that. Symbol Matching. Bidding. Secret Trader. Rotational allocation of resources, making words from single letters or letter groups, and Christmas lights. Oh, Christmas lights. That is freaking terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was hoping you would
refrigerator
get
refrigerator repairman for with beginners Christmas with Christmas lights. Yeah. That'd have been the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was fun. That was super fun.
So what I left off was I was going to give you a licensed game, and it was going to be 50 Shades of Grey, the dexterity game. But I decided not to do that. that was one of the thoughts I had.
See, and that wouldn't be fair either, because then you'd have a name and a mechanic all and in then one thing.
I was trying to be terrible.
Yeah.
It's just funnier if that's a dexterity game, right? So, and then you like draw blindfolds or throwing darts.
Yeah, right.
So, all right, let's do some questions.
We got a ton of them here. So we're already running long, so let's do that. So let's get into it here. Scott Montel Jr. says, Pepsi or Coke?
I drink water, and we don't endorse anything, but Rob drinks diet. You just say diet, right?
I drink diet, whatever the cola is at the store. I generally prefer... So, okay, I prefer Coke to Pepsi, but I prefer Diet Pepsi to Diet Coke.
Oh, interesting.
I think the flavor's a little better. Unpub, at the Unpub says, what are your goals, plans, hopes for Unpub 6? I think we're going to talk about that in quite a bit of detail.
Yes, next episode.
Next episode.
Yep, that'll be our topic next episode.
Chris Rollins, at NPC Chris says, what is the one game or theme that you could never get to work quite right, but wish that you could have?
Here be dragons. What about you?
I mean, I feel like I have a lot.
That for me is the one, though. That's the one that someday I wish I could design a game called Here Be Dragons, because I just really like the title.
Yeah. Soda Kings.
Yeah, Soda Kings.
Gosh, I just can't hit it. Haven't been able to do it. Okay, from Ben Pinchback, a couple from him. Let's see. What's the best pitch idea you had that you regret not working on more, and why aren't you working it?
Here Be Dragons. I don't know. I really like that idea. But I had this idea for a superpowered trick-taking game that I thought would be really cool, where like you were superheroes
and you were
taking tricks, and the tricks would power you up, and that would allow you to break the rules to take more tricks,
mm-hmm.
Or to stop people from getting tricks. And the idea was to damage everyone else throughout the game to win. But yeah, I never worked on that. It still sounds cool though. Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead. What about you?
Oh, best pitch idea that I had that I never worked. I don't know. That's really hard because I feel like if I really liked it that much, I would have been working on it.
Except maybe Soda Kings.
Like Soda Kings for me, the theme is still so good.
It is because it's great.
Mechanically, I just haven't been able to figure it out yet. I don't know. I think all the ones that I regretted not working are the ones that I was in that position on. I already worked on them and I either got them to a point where I was happy with them or they turned out to be bad.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I can say Maelstrom. Maybe I would get back to Maelstrom at some point. I don't know.
Still like Maelstrom.
Ben also says, why never a co-design? You guys work together. Run the Fleeple plan and dev card games at lunch.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We've tried to design together before. We're just not good at it.
It doesn't work.
I think that we might have some luck if we... The only way I could see it ever working for us would be if we said, listen, from now on, if we design a game, we design it together. And Jason has an idea, and we go with that. So I'm the lead on that idea,
mm-hmm.
right? So I guess my name is first on the box, right? But like we do it together. And then if it's your idea, because the only success we've ever had designing together was the BTG CCG. Mm-hmm. And the only reason that worked is because you had designed a game already. And then together we were able to enhance it, yeah. which is honestly what we do anyways. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the stuff we've designed has been very co-designy because we've given each other so much feedback.
Yeah.
But in the end, that one person still has all the power and it was their idea. So we respect that.
Right. And it's one of those things where you know, the one person has the clear vision of what they want it to be. Right.
Right.
And the other person helps support that vision. But sometimes that person proposes ideas that are contrary to that or don't line up with that.
Right.
And so by keeping it, by saying that's your game and that's my game, there's never any opportunity for us to get frustrated with each other.
Right.
You know? And I kind of like that.
Me too.
Yeah. So
it's like we almost co-design. Because there are some games that I've designed and you've designed where the best ideas have come from the other person.
I mean, we walk right up to that line.
Yeah.
Really, really close. But I think that line is something that we both maybe appreciate having that line there a little bit.
Yeah.
So that we can still have the final say.
Right.
And not have to argue about it.
Yeah. Because I mean, I know there are times where you'd be like, I'm going to give up on this game, and I'd be like, no, let's keep working on it. But you know,
yeah,
like in even though the right thing to do might just be to give up on it. So yeah.
Matt Loomis actually replied to this tweet, and he says, just like Mythbusters, they hate each other but do a good show for the greater and do a show for the greater good. That's funny. I don't think Jamie and Adam actually hate each other.
No.
They're just not friends.
And actually we don't hate each other either. We are mean to each other a lot, right. Especially at work, but I mean we get along pretty well and we hang out. So
let's see, another one from Ben. New question. What's it going to take to get special guest Matt Loomis on the show? I don't know, Matt. What are you doing? You busy?
My thought about Matt coming on the show is someday there's this really hot place I can think of, right? And then there's going to be like an ice age there.
Uh-huh.
And then that's the day when Matt Loomis can come on the show.
I don't know. Well, okay.
In case anyone misses that code, it's when hell freezes over. I'm just kidding. I love Matt. He's welcome down our show anytime.
We actually got, I got a text message from a friend of the show last week, and he was like, hey, I want to be on your show, but I don't have anything to plug. I think it'd just be funny. And I was like, yeah, all right, let's figure it out.
We talked to him, like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
So.
So really, all it really takes is an email or a text messenger or a DM on Twitter.
Tell us you want to be on the show.
And then we'll probably be okay with that.
Yeah. The only time we have trouble with that is sometimes you'll say, hey, I want to come on your show because I want to promote this. And we're totally okay with that because we love that. But sometimes the timing doesn't work out. So if you're just coming out of the show because you're a friend of ours and you want to promote something, if the timing doesn't work out, a lot of times that doesn't happen because you know, in our timing can be rough sometimes based on our schedules.
I think we're fairly open about that. We record in advance and our schedule can get a little wonky. And sometimes it just happens where we just have things going on our lives and stuff gets a little nuts.
We've had plenty of people who we've never had on the show that I still don't know why we haven't had on the show that I really wanted to have on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because schedules haven't worked out. So.
Yeah. Brilliant man here, Mr. Tom Gerganis at Tom Gerg on Twitter asks, I think one of the most biting questions of history: whatever happened to Joe Piscopo?
So here's the thing about Joe Piscopo. Oh,
yeah,
I met Joe Piscopo.
What?
In person. I shook his hand.
Really?
Yes.
Wow!
On stage on Broadway, in New York.
No way.
True story.
And I then think you're lying to me.
And then I won a dance contest.
What?
I'm not even lying. This all happened.
What?
Tom Greganis, you're the best question asker ever. This is a true story.
I've never heard this story.
I know.
I think you're lying to me.
I promise this is true. It's high school, right? I'm in high school. We go on our trip to New York for choir, right?
Okay.
We're going to sing at some big church or something.
Uh-huh.
And we get to go to Broadway. Go see Grease on Broadway. And the radio guy, Vic, or whatever.
I don't know.
There's like Vic something. He's the radio guy who kind of like announces what's happening in Greece, right? It was played by Joe Piscopo. And
okay.
I had a dance contest. And myself and a few others got to go on stage, like, because we were like loud. So they just, you guys, come on. See, we were like in the balcony. They called us down. We go on stage and we're like dancing with Joe Piscopo. And we won. So we got a t-shirt from Joe Piscopo.
That's badass.
Yeah, that actually happened. So, wow. Tom Greganis, you are going to be really surprised when you listen to this episode,
yeah,
because there is a story behind Joe Piscopo.
Holy cow.
And this guy. First famous person I ever met.
Wow. I've still never met a single famous person.
I can't remember if I've met some other famous people, but like, you know.
Like, I mean, like for real famous.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like Joe Piscopo was probably the best. So.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty
that's
impressive.
That's hilarious.
That's great. So whatever happened to Joe Piscopo, he met Jason and then dropped off the face
career
of the earth because
that
was the highlight of his life. And he's like, I'm done. Last one I've got here is from Hanbo. What is your con schedule for 2016? That's actually a good question.
That's a great question. So first thing is Unpub.
Yep.
And then Origins this year. We're actually going to do Origins this year. We'll be there Friday and Saturday.
Are we driving in Friday morning?
Yeah.
Yeah, driving in Friday morning. So we'll be there Friday afternoon.
Yep.
I guess we'll drive in pretty early. So
early Friday.
Late morning
and then we'll be there all day, the rest of the day, Friday, all day Saturday, and
yep,
then a little bit Sunday morning, and then we'll head home.
Right.
Got some exciting things, hopefully, for Origins.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we'll be at Gen Con. We've got to be Gen Con.
Yep.
We'll do a live show at Gen Con, like we always do. We'll do the Iron Design at Gen Con, which we'll have to talk about that soon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already excited about that. We don't have anybody, so if you have any suggestions on that, feel free.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will, of course, be at Grand Con, like we always are, because we love Grand Con.
Love Grand Con.
I think that's it for this year that we know of, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So that's actually one more con than we usually do, because mm-hmm, we don't normally go to Origins, but kind of worked out scheduling-wise this year, and we got some opportunities there, so we are going to go to Origins.
Yeah, I guess I should say I will be at the booth at the Van Ryder game. Van Ryder Games is going to have a booth at Gen Con this year.
Yeah.
And assuming all goes well, as it goes as planned with printing for Saloon Tycoon, I will be at the booth here and there during Gen Con to run some demos and shake some hands and sign some game boxes, hopefully. So I think I'll probably be there for 3 hours each day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, probably in two shifts each day. So if you are looking for me while you're at Gen Con, it's a good opportunity for you to find me is at the VRG booth. And I'll certainly be tweeting my location for that nonsense.
Awesome.
But yeah, I think that's our full con schedule.
Sweet. Quick story to end the show with. This sums up how far we've come in 200 episodes. So I was talking to somebody at work today, our friend Taryn, right?
Yeah.
She recently went to Hawaii and she sees me and she says, Jason, I have to tell you something crazy.
I love this.
So you heard about this?
She told me this is great.
So in Hawaii, they have these things called ABC stores. And I guess that those are like little thrifty, like touristy stores, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They have a bunch of random stuff in there. Yep. And they go into one of them. They went into several, she said, but they go into this one and there is 5 copies of Water Balloon Washout. And she's like, where did you get this game? Where did you get this game at? And he's like, oh, I got it at Gen Con. It's a great game. I really love it. I don't remember selling this game to someone in Hawaii. I must have, but that is so awesome.
It's so cool.
So they walked into a random store in Hawaii on the island of the L Island, whatever that is. I don't know. I don't even know.
I'm not sure.
Maybe that's not even an island. Maybe that's a town or something, but or a city.
I don't know.
Anyways, holy crap. Like, what are the odds on that?
5 copies. So, that's crazy.
Yeah. So he bought 5 copies or more from me. Probably 6 because of the deal with that. But it must have been a year or two ago and I don't remember that transaction, but I was like, so did you tell him you know me? And she didn't. And I was like, what? You should have told him you knew me. So anyways, that was super cool. So I feel like that's a good ending point.
Yeah, that's great.
How far have we come, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So cool.
Episode 200, man, that's the end.
In the books.
Wow.
Yeah.
I still don't have a beer in my hand, but here's a fake toast to the next 200.
Yeah. Woo.
Yeah. Woo. Tink.
Tink.
That was the glasses tinking.
Cha-ching.
Right. Okay. So thanks, guys. Thank you Thank you, everybody, for sticking with us on this ride. This has been a lot of fun. I think we had a lot of fun tonight, too. Hope you enjoyed that the pitches. So thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, here I go. You can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I'm @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher and all the other podcast spots that you can find stuff. You can go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com. You can call our Google voice number, which is 770-TEL-BTG. We'll be back again next week. Next week will be our final episode before Unpub, and then stay tuned after that I guess we're going to record a show live at Unpub, probably. I don't know exactly what form that'll take.
Yeah, but something.
Something, and we'll do our best to get it up that night. Uploading remotely could be tough, so worst case scenario, we'll have it up on Monday sometime.
That's right.
Yeah, so there we go. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
But it's just a good thing to play with in my pocket, you know? When I just because I like to fiddle with things, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I'm a fiddler when it comes to things in my pocket.